This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. We continue to digest the results of Monday's election and to drill down on what it means for us. Will a lot get done in a more cooperative atmosphere? That's what you think if you're positive, or are we headed to legislative gridlock? Will we see a period of stability with the Liberals 13 votes away from a snap election? And are the knives out for underperforming party leaders? Listening to those acceptance speeches, you would have thought that Trudeau, Scheer, and Singh were celebrating stellar results rather than disappointments that reflect a country more divided than any time in recent memory. Want to hear from you? 416-360-0740. Toll free 1-866-740-4740. And now I'd like to welcome Kim Wright, NDP strategist and principal of Wright Strategies, Bob Richardson, Liberal strategist and senior counsel to National Public Relations, and Jason Leader, conservative strategist, president at Enterprise. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Okay, let's start with Kim. You're wearing pink. I'm not sure if that's significant, but why did the NDP not make any inroads here in Ontario?
Well, it's interesting. There were some we lost, some where I saw in Essex County, for example, Tracy Ramsey, who unfortunately lost that, you know, when you have 23,000 votes and you still lose, it's heartbreaking. But there's some new MPs that the New Democrats elected that were pretty excited about. Matthew Green out of Hamilton, Lindsay Matheson from London, some of our new Ontario MPs, and some returning folks who have some real deep legislative roots. You know, I look to people like Brian Massey from Windsor, Carol Hughes from Algoma-Manitoulin, in a minority government situation where it's going to be more important than ever that not only do you understand how to work through and across party lines, but also understand how the rules function. I think that those folks will be well served in a new government. So I'm excited about some of them. Do I hate losing? Absolutely. And I don't think anyone likes the ugly side of election night, but voters are never wrong. I may not agree with them, but voters are never wrong.
But before we move on to the guys again, why no inroads in Toronto?
So we made some inroads. We had some really interesting new candidates that I think will catch on. But I do think that the Prime Minister's whistle-stop tour in the last couple of days in the campaign certainly helped. And certainly the tried-and-true message of strategic voting and the boogeyman of conservatives works out. I would have liked to have seen more. And to be frank, I think what we're going to see over the, you know, we had 6 weeks of a really good Jagmeet Singh campaign. We needed 6 months of a really good Jagmeet Singh campaign. And so now he's got 18 months, 2 years to prove to Canadians who he actually is.
Bob Richardson, again, to listen to the Prime Minister's acceptance speech, you would have thought that he won another huge majority. He was even saying things like Canadians have rejected division. Is there any soul searching now going on in the Liberal Party?
Well, I, number one, I reject your premise, your description of the speech, which I don't believe is accurate. I think his speech, which I listened to, he even mentioned the two provinces where he has no representation and made it very clear that he's going to have to listen and do work. And he also, in French, mentioned parts of Quebec that clearly went to the Bloc where he's going to have to do work. So I think the categorization of his speech is not necessarily representative of the speech that I heard. So yeah, he's got a lot of work to do. He's got, but you know, he did, let's not forget, he did elect members of parliament in 8 out of 10 provinces and 2 out of 3 of the Northern Territories. He's got a pretty solid group across the board. He does have some holes that he's going to have to fill, and they're going to have to figure out how they do that. His father used the Senate when he had those problems. Mr. Harper used the Senate in the earlier part of his term when he was sort of lacking some Quebec representation. I suppose that's a possibility.
Isn't the Senate allegedly now nonpartisan?
Well, that's just it. So that it might be a little bit more difficult, or that vehicle may not be as readily available as it was in the past. So he's got a lot of work to do. He's got to listen. He's got to learn. He's got to work with every party, not just one party. I thought Harper did that very well, getting other parties to vote for, almost on a vote-by-vote basis. And the Martin government did that relatively well for a while, too, as well. So lots of work to do, lots of learning, and I think he's got a lot of listening to do, particularly in Western Canada.
Jason Leader, I know you've been emphasizing the gains that the Conservatives made in the number of seats and saying that Andrew Scheer has been doing well, but still we are reading and hearing about the knives being out, and Angus Reid even put a number on it. They said 40% of Conservatives want him gone.
A couple of things. I think each of the leaders, and I think you've heard from Bob and Kim, and I might have my quibbles with some of the things that they've said. I'm not going to spend, I don't think we need to relitigate the election campaign. I think each of these leaders, including Scheer, and especially Scheer, has to take the learnings from the failures of the last campaign. So, yeah, listen, Scheer got more votes than Harper did in 2011 and 2015, but it wasn't enough, and it wasn't enough in the areas that count. If you can't win the 905, you can't win the government. And so, particularly women in the 905, was who we couldn't close the deal with. And that's a big deal, and frankly, it's sort of not acceptable to not learn from those mistakes. And as I've made the point a number of times, Kim made it here, the voters are always right. You know, you can't sort of lament their inability to understand your message. It's your fault, no matter what. No matter if you're Mr. Trudeau and there's liberals who will say, well, Saskatchewan and Alberta, they're so stupid, they don't understand all the things that we're doing for them. Well, no, the problem is with you. And same goes with Scheer. If you can't win a seat in the 905 or one or two or whatever, the problem is with you and your message, and you've got to adjust. So we've got some work to do. I think that in a minority parliament, voters judge you by a different way than they normally do. But in this kind of a minority parliament, it's can you work along with others? Are you able to be productive in getting some of your policies put together? And ultimately, are you a force for good or not good? And I think that's the way that people will be judged. The person that adjusts the best, whether that's Mr. Singh, who's finally sort of stepped into the big leagues and sort of got off the couch, and whether or not he's able to make himself a player, Mr. Scheer, who I think is going to have to put a little water in his wine, and Mr. Trudeau, who we haven't seen a lot of experience with him being cooperative with other parties, sort of made it my way or highway approach. Whoever solves that Rubik's cube is going to probably win the next election.
But are the knives out for Scheer? Is he going to be? We had people here yesterday predicting, well, they were not conservative people, that he'd be out in a year.
Well, we don't know. We don't know that one way or another. And anybody that tells you they do, I think Libby is blowing smoke. So we know there's a leadership review in April. We know that Mr. Scheer wants to pass it. We know that there are people who don't want him to pass it. We also know that in a minority government, it would be a lot easier for those who wanted to get rid of Mr. Scheer, just practically speaking, if it weren't a minority parliament right now, because it's a lot more difficult, with the specter of an election. I'm not saying there's going to be an election in a few months or anything like that, but the specter of a possible election is something that, it's one of the things that dissuades parties from making big, bold choices and changes. The fundamental about this kind of stuff, certainly there is criticism of the campaign, Libby, I'm not going to pretend there isn't. There's criticism of Mr. Scheer personally. I personally think he did better than most first-time leaders, but I think there's a lot of disappointment at the end of the campaign. So, there's going to be a bit of a debate in the party about does he get to stay or doesn't he? And my position on that is, like a lot of it, it's probably smart to have a second chance at it. but you don't automatically deserve it, and you got to earn it, and you got to show that you're listening and getting better. And that's what Harper did between 04 and 06. And that's what Mr. Scheer's going to have to do.
Yeah. And Jason, it's Kim. You know, ultimately, that's what the case, all of the leaders have to make, from Prime Minister Trudeau, Andrew Scheer, Jagmeet Singh, Elizabeth May, even, will need to say to their core supporters what it is that they would like to see from themselves going forward. How have they listened? How would they change tax? A bit of a mea culpa, but also, more importantly, how they want to win next time. And I think there was such a high expectation, in particular for Andrew Scheer, you know, how prime ministerial he tried to be and all the rest of it. But the disconnect between who people thought he necessarily was, who he absolutely was, who he is still being considered as being, I think those are the kinds of things that they need to address. Look, there's always, after an election, especially ones where you don't get the result that you like, you know, the whispers of the knives and the sharpening of the knives, how far those go when we finally get to leadership reviews. That's almost, you know, we'll see as that chorus unfolds. Ultimately, though, each of the party leaders needs to look in the mirror, look deep into themselves and say, do I want this? Do I want this for another several years? Am I ready for this? And more importantly, do I want to be prime minister? And what does it take to actually get there, to authentically lead Canadians across Canada in a very divided country? And that's the type of soul searching that everyone needs to do once they frankly take a breath, because this has been a very long campaign, a very toxic and acrimonious campaign that has not only gone on for the last 6 weeks, but frankly for the last couple of years. And everyone needs to take a breath, take a break, figure out what a new parliament looks like. What do Canadians expect? And how do we go from there? And I think if they do that, if they actually take those moments, I think that the new parliament, the new minority parliament, can work at least for a while.
Before we ask Bob for his take on that, I'd like to give the numbers out again. People, what are you expecting, if anything, from a minority parliament? Is there a leader that you would hope would be gone to give your choice a better chance, if you're a conservative or a new Democrat? Or do you think it's a good idea to let everybody have another crack at it? The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. And Bob, is this a question of the Liberals having to compromise and to get support on a vote-by-vote basis? But on the other hand, certainly the NDP has no money, and there's a history of Canadians punishing whatever party triggers a snap election too early. So can the Liberals just kind of figure that they're good to go for a while without having to do anything much differently?
Canadians do not want to hear from us, aka the political class, for at least two to two and a half years. So I think that that's true. Look, I think if you take a look at leadership right now, I'd say three of the leaders are safe. Mr. Blanchet is obviously safe, having, you know, tripled the number of seats that the Bloc has, and he was quite a good performer. I think Mr. Singh is safe. It was his, I kind of equate it to Jack Layton's first election, his seat count. He lost about 40% of his members, but he did, perform well in the election. I think he's got a lot of room for growth. I think Mr. Trudeau's safe. At the height of the SNC stuff, he was getting 85 or 90% approval among Liberals. I would suspect it would be in and around there again today. I think Ms. May has to go. I think she's been...
Hasn't she said she's going? Hasn't she said that this would be her last election?
I think she did, and it's time for her to go. That was a terrible campaign. It had no message. It was all over the place. Logistically, it was a mess.
She was all over the place versus her party.
Yeah, so, you know, and she was just, and it looked like a disorganized United Church bake sale. You know, like, she needs to go.
In fairness, I've gotten some really good butter tarts from those bake sales, Bob.
Let's not go against butter tarts. They need to clean up and become a much more professional operation. In terms of Mr. Scheer, I didn't think it was a great performance. a terrible performance in urban Canada. Bad numbers in the 905. Quebec wasn't good. Among any demographic that's growing, younger, ethno, urban, he isn't doing well. They've got to really take a look at that and say, what's going on here? Because there's a huge disconnect. And if he doesn't do that, he will lose the next election again. I'll leave it up to conservatives to decide whether he should stay or go. But it was not a good performance on a whole lot of areas, particularly on for 82% of us in this country who live in urban areas.
Well, yeah, exactly. He seemed to, do you think that he got a little bit better towards the end of the campaign, or did he kind of get caught out with the, I found with very little things, he just couldn't explain them, you know, like the insurance thing, the dual citizenship thing. And even at that very end, that, that weird Kinsella thing, Jason Leader, did those, and again, I say they are small things. Did they amount to anything?
Yeah, absolutely they did. And I'm not going to pretend they didn't. Each of those issues is sort of something you, for a proper operation and a leader who's in the right headspace, you swat those away like flies. I mean, those are things, you know, I've run a war room during a national campaign. This is the kind of stuff that you swat away and you have a bad half a day and it's gone. And so I felt like Mr. Scheer sort of ran out of gas at the end of the campaign, to my eye. You know, and this happens on your first campaign, you know, it's to a lot of people. I felt like Mr. Singh, by the way, ran out of gas a little bit after the English debate as well. It's sort of like the difference between, you know, playing 60 games a year in the minor leagues and then you go and play 84 leagues, you know, in hockey or basketball. And that last quarter of the season for the rookies is sometimes pretty tough. And that's what I saw in this campaign is it's easy to get dejected. Sometimes the movement, the numbers don't move as quickly as you want them to. And all those things, the headspace, am I confident? Am I rested? Is this like, am I feeling like I want to do this more or not? And so, you know, there was certainly some rapid response failures, and that's on both the candidate and the team. And then I did feel like Scheer sort of ran out of gas at the end. And I think,
but Jason,
some of that
not
was
to relitigate some of this, but shouldn't he have known that this whole dual citizenship issue, which he decided right before the beginning of the campaign, the fixed election campaign, oops, maybe I should need to get this cleared up. Frankly, him and his team should have gotten that out of the way. The moment he became leader of the federal conservatives, he should have gotten that out of the way. You want to run to be a G7 leader? Pick a darn team. You can't play for two teams on the G7.
Well, yeah, Mulcair had that problem as well.
And I would have said the same thing to them. But especially considering how much he was such a hypocrite about it and going after Michael Jean and Tom Mulcair and Stéphane Dion. Like, look, there were some things that were just shouldn't have been rookie mistakes given how much you guys were playing for keeps, but there were. I take exception to your comment that Jagmeet Singh ran out of gas in the second half of the campaign. I was seeing those rallies. I was seeing the rapid response. I was seeing the stuff that was coming out. I've got our campaign song stuck in my head still. God help me, but I don't think he ran out of steam. I think it was starting off a campaign where everybody was writing your obituary, and then he finally started to turn it around. Whether he can manage that momentum, that becomes a question mark. And then the flip side of that is on the Liberal side, you know, there were some things that came up during the course of the campaign about the Prime Minister that they need to do some soul searching around. And, you know, how does he go forward? Yes, he absolutely got a majority. Yes, you know, maybe Judy Scrow could have been right. I don't know. But Canadians
what?
Were, well, Judy Scrow's comments, but let's not go there again.
Let's not go there.
They need to look around that cabinet, that caucus. What is it Canadians expect from a policy framework to deliver on, and also from a leadership? If they can't have the same ethics problems they had in the last government.
Okay, I wanted to get to those policy things. And Bob, you know, one of the complaints that people had, for most people, healthcare is the top issue. We didn't hear about it. We didn't hear about pharmacare. Has there been any discussion about getting down to those very important issues, getting down to the issues, or are you still just sorting out the politics?
I think we're just sorting out the politics. I think it was a terrible election from a policy perspective. I don't think that there was really any great policy focus in this campaign heavily by any of the campaigns. Maybe one would concede that Miss May certainly had a heavy policy focus, but the rest not so much. And I think the Canadians are worse for it. And I think there was no opportunity really to debate policy either. There was one English language to debate. It was a fiasco. That needs to be cleaned up for the next time out. If we're doing two debates in French, we ought to be doing at least two debates in English. So we need to fix a couple of those things.
Yeah, but that's your leader, Justin Trudeau.
I'm not pointing fingers or saying anybody has been great on this issue. I'm just saying we need to do this properly, and we need to come up with a consensus on doing it properly. And we did not do it properly this time. And Liberals need to take some of the blame on that too, as well.
Okay, let's hear from some leaders showed up for two English debates.
Let's hear from Dave in Brampton. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Well, I think Scheer possibly lost a lot of votes by personal attacks on Trudeau rather than his policies. Also, he came across as, I don't give a damn about the environment. And he did say he was going to push those pipelines through. I think he lost a lot of votes on all three of those.
Okay, Dave, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
We'll check that with Jason. So, yes, a lot of people say that the environment did turn out to be one of the main themes of the campaign, and they said the Conservatives fell short in having a plan. And it was, I have to say, quite jarring at the English debate when right out of the gate, before anything else was said as an opening statement, Andrew Scheer called Trudeau a phony and a fraud. I mean, you'd think that might have come up a little later or something. Jason, what did you think of that?
Two things on that. Let's deal with the last question first. That was clearly done strategically to win the social media night and to frame the first write-throughs of print stories, which was ultimately very successful. I think it was unsuccessful in retrospect as a video moment, as a moment for people who were watching the debate. And so I tend to agree that he came off too hot there. In the moment, I think if you're an undecided voter, you probably had the same response that your caller did, which was, I've talked to a few people who said, I came off a little hot. So I don't disagree with that contention. I know why it was done. And I think they met that objective, but maybe won the battle, lost the war, kind of thing. And on the second issue that you raised in terms of the environment, I think it's a very good discussion. So number one, I do think you should and can have a reasonable and an aggressive climate and environmental policy to get elected in this country. I think that's a good thing for all of us to ascribe to. Bob made the point earlier, this election was not about any issue. I have to agree. Listen, anybody pretending and anybody declaring victory on any issue coming out of this campaign, I see a bunch of stuff. Well, this means you can't get elected in Canada without having a carbon tax on your platform. Well, literally every single conservative premier in the last year or two has got elected without a conservative or explicitly arguing against a carbon tax. This election was not about an issue. Mr. Trudeau avoided talk of a carbon tax. He campaigned on other things. That said, whether or not I believe it is true or not isn't true, but I just don't want the mythology of this election to be that this was an election about a carbon tax or about pharmacare or about tax cuts or anything like that. This was a referendum on who you wanted leading the country. Ultimately, the 905 and the 416 chose Trudeau over Scheer.
Okay, yeah, I think I would agree with that, Kim.
Yeah, I think we also do need to look at, where we're at in our within that sort of intergovernmental relations with the provinces, with the various Indigenous communities, with municipalities. And I think if there has to be one thing that is the focus of this new parliament, it really is recalibrating that relationship between all three levels of government, both from a service delivery, but also just the temperature that has increased, whether it be on separatism in Quebec Western alienation or whatever things that people want to try to use to fly their flags these days. I think it behooves us all that our national governments figure out a way to move that discussion forward. When we look at healthcare, we look at daycare, we look at infrastructure, all of that has to have all three parties at the table, and that's going to be the biggest challenge for the Maori government.
Is there, we are starting to wrap things up, is there going to be one issue that the NDP will have as their price that they want to start with? Pharmacare, maybe?
I think a meaningful movement on pharmacare. You know, I don't want to presuppose where any of these debates and discussions and negotiations roll out. Jagmeet put forward six issues that matter to him as leader of the New Democrats. I think that would be the starting place. I would expect there needs to be meaningful movement on pharmacare.
Okay. And Bob, what are you leaving us with?
I think the Prime Minister needs to sit down with each of the leaders or their parties and have discussions with them, see what he can do. I don't think we should be, quote, held hostage by any one party. I think we should be looking to try to do things on a vote-by-vote basis. I think there's a number of things that we have in common with the New Democratic Party on climate change, on pharmacare, on a number of others, where I think we can work together and work some things out. But that doesn't exclude that shouldn't exclude the government working with other parties on certain issues too, as well, like pipelines in the West.
Okay, and Jason,
I just wanted to echo what Bob just said, and you know, we've got, you know, between the two of them, the Conservatives and the Liberals, essentially control everything outside Quebec in this country, save a few seats. I know Kim, you know, there's 25 New Democratic seats, there's a couple of Green seats. I'm proposing, or what I would like to see out of this government, is the same kind of approach that Mr. Martin used in 04, Mr. Harper used in 06, which is the one that Bob's espousing, which is a case-by-case basis. You can work with the Conservatives on things, you can work with the New Democrats on things, you can work with the Green Party, and you might even be able to work with the Bloc on some stuff. And I think Canada will be better governed if Mr. Trudeau operates that way, rather than, for example, a two-year accord with the NDP. Now, the NDP members don't like that because it doesn't give them as much bargaining power, and it doesn't sort of, you know, like, you know, their 25 seats aren't the most important ones in Parliament. But I would just say, I think Canada will be better governed if Mr. Trudeau chooses that approach rather than a two-year accord with the NDP.
Well, yeah, I think there's not much appetite for that in the country.
No, but what I think needs to be happening is really ultimately is that there actually needs to be a working parliament that works for Canadians, regardless of whether it's issue by issue or anything else. I think things actually have to move forward, and people need to feel that it's moving forward, because a lot of people have been left behind.
Okay, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Bob Richardson, Jason Leader, and Kim Wright.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.